has very kindly agreed to step in at the last minute. Leanne is a refugee health nurse who's been in the Albury Wodonga clinic for the last 18 months, but there's been a refugee program there for about 5 years. Yeah. Michelle has already spoken today, but she's going to talk a little bit more about herself. But Michelle is the multicultural clinical health nurse consultant for both the Mid-North Coast and local health districts in COFS. And you'll talk a little bit. Yep. And Leanne Schmidt, who also known as...
Today Georgia I'm Green. Actually being Georgia Green. Georgia is from Townsville Refugee Health Service, and she couldn't make it today, but her new colleague Kylie, where are you? Lovely Kylie. So step in when I get something wrong, okay? Because I've got Georgia's words, so but please feel comfortable to back up or contradict whatever I say. So and Kylie's only just recently joined the Townsville team, so yeah, it's a really great celebration to have more workforce up in Townsville. Yeah.
Thank you for being Georgia. And last but not least, Casey Hissick. And Casey is from West Wimmera.
Yes.
Yeah. West Wimmera Health Service in Victoria, which is halfway between, on the Western Highway, between Melbourne and Adelaide, more or less. So, all fairly diverse areas. So what we might do first is just give each of you a couple of minutes, just briefly, to talk about your role a little bit more than what I have done, and then we'll have a few questions that we might throw around. Leanne, do you want to just dive in?
So I'm on the border of Victoria and New South Wales in a place called Albury Wodonga, and I am the refugee health nurse who sits with a GP in a medical practice. So we sit in a general practice who is bulk billing and support both Victoria and New South Wales settlement services. We set up slightly different to a lot of people because we do New South Wales and Victoria. Again, some of the challenges I've seen, challenges with settlement caseworkers and access to services with transport, access to specialists, access to people that will bulk bill, and access to services that use translators has all been a challenge. And the hours that I'm approved to work are also challenging because it's just me. I don't have admin support. I don't have a coordinator. It's just me.
Mm-hmm. How many clients are we talking about?
Over the journey, we were settlement service for a large Bhutanese community, and I believe it was the largest area outside Sydney to settle Bhutanese. So in the 5 years, I think we've had about 600 refugees come through the door, and our new arrivals, I'm not good with the stats, I'm afraid. I think in the last, about average, about 30 a month. Yeah.
That's significant.
And that's both sides though, so that's the challenge as well.
Thanks, Leanne. What about yourself, Michelle?
So I started looking after the refugees as the old TB nurse back in 2000. Anyway, just lots of people started coming, and then in 2004 we became a refugee settlement area. The government decided we were a good place to settle because sanctuary had been up until that point, and it worked really well. So they started arriving end of 2004. Already I had an issue with not being able to find GPs. So, and as a TB nurse, they were bringing me everybody, even though they didn't have, weren't even on a health undertaking, which is what happens in New South Wales. So I just said, well, we need to do something about this. So I started the clinic February 2006, probably seen nearly 3,000 people through the clinic. Usually only get about between 75 and 110, 20 people a year. But the last, I don't know, since 2013, we've had at least 300 plus a year arrive. And we've had people from 9 different African countries. We've had people from a big group of Myanmarese people, so we're about 1,000 in COFS from there alone. A lot of people from Afghanistan, and then in the last, since April 2017, we started getting people from Iraq and Syria, and that's probably close to 500 now in that time. So yeah, been really busy. We have lots of challenges. As you heard before, I'm so lucky now. As of Friday, I got a letter to say I need 2 more nurses and a part-time social worker, and that's only due to the work of Pam, who's been working with me for a couple of years, and another nurse, and because we keep really good occasions of service, and we could prove that we were doing about 10 face-to-face occasions of service with every person, because we're a nurse-led clinic and we do everything, and we deliver medications, explain with an interpreter. It's really quite complex. We case manage families, we deal with them as a family unit, and obviously we get singles. But yeah, so it's been really busy and really challenging, but hopefully, like I said, maybe soon we'll be able to go home before 7 o'clock at night. And
thank you, Leanne. Yeah. Leanne, are you able just to give us a little bit of a
I can give some. Some of the other stuff isn't retrievable in my brain. So the model of care in Townsville, and Kylie, step in. The Hospital Health Service, Townsville Hospital Health Service, contracted out the provision of refugee health services to the North Queensland, it was a version of Medicare Local. They retained that Medicare Local entity, so it's actually delivering clinical services in Townsville. Have I got that right? Yep. So they've still, they have a PHN, but, and I think they're in the same building, but they deliver clinical services. So Georgia has been the only nurse in that space delivering a contractual obligation to Hospital Health Service. And that's been, I think it's being the only voice, there's nobody else, and trying to manage the settlement agency's requirements, the client's needs, and also be available to meet the, in some case, changing requirements of the contract to the Hospital Health Service has really pulled her in so many different ways, and very challenging. So I think the success story is having Kylie come on board, and you're now going to be working what?
Full time.
So just imagine suddenly doubling your workforce in a regional area. I think the ongoing challenge around maintaining GP practices, primary care, and at the moment I think there's a couple of GPs that have actually closed.
12 teetering on dropping down, so we continue to spend a lot of our time coordinating services and building relationships with general practices rather than a case management model, so it's more around that, working very closely with the GP clinic, dental, and also the GP practices. So more of a coordination role as opposed to a hands-on case management role. The Townsend Multicultural Service Group is sort of the lead agency that does, on paper, does a lot of that case management role, and we are the sort of, when things, where the capacity is stretched, then we sort of plug the holes and fill the gaps when required. So yeah, you're very correct in saying that poor George has been pulled in every direction and has done a wonderful job for the last 18 months plus.
And for new families, the experience is Townsville's very hot, very humid, and transport, public transport is very sparse, and where affordable housing is, access to any reasonable transport, just there's not a match. So we have lots of women with large families having to navigate a walking pathway to a hospital from long distances away. So the risk of DNA, the risk of not actually getting the evening appointment is really high, and so people miss out just because of that location, that geographical spread that's happening up there.
And unfortunately, as most people
people may know there was youth flights that used to occur in council, so yeah. Housing at the best of times for people who can afford the exuberant cost of housing. Unfortunately, a lot of the rental market has capitalised on floods, and the prices of rent is just out of the reach of anyone who's on standard payments. So what's happening now is there's an initial placement of families, and then we'll work very hard to get those families into GP practices, and then of course because towns are so spread out, then they may be placed more permanently in a different house that's now a 30-minute journey from the GP practice that initially was agreeable to check their healthcare on board. So, risk of DNA to appointments is huge. So, a lot of our time is around building those relationships with GP practices to hang in there with us on this journey of that's very influenced by public transport and accommodation issues.
Anything I've missed?
No.
Good.
Thank you both. Casey, are you able to give us a little snapshot of what it's like for you?
So I'm quite different to the other three in that I'm remote. So we're, like I said, halfway between Adelaide and Melbourne, and that's a minimum four-hour drive to Melbourne and a minimum 3.5-hour drive to Adelaide. I mainly work with Karen refugees. Nil is a population of about 2,000, 2,500 people, and 10% or just shy of 200 are Karen refugees. The Karen came to Nil, started about 8 years ago, because Lovadup is a manufacturing duck business where they kill ducks and send them off to the catering restaurant industry. And the manager 8 years ago could not get local employees, and so he went down to some conference down in Melbourne and learnt about this population that were looking to settle somewhere. He bought, I think, three families originally, and then it's just gone from there. I've been in my role in February it was 2 years, we're still getting new families every so often, and we're still, some families are leaving as well, but we're staying around that 200. Right from the start, the Nil Learning Centre have been a big part in settling the Karen. And they provide English classes. In the last year, they have set up a social enterprise where Karen women come and sew, and they've also now got a florist there. And that just provides working opportunities for the Karen women. Otherwise, they would be home with their children and, you know, be subordinate to their husbands, who a lot of them do still work for Lovadup. But that's also changing with changes in practices becoming more technical rather than hands-on. The Learning Centre have also just recently taken over a cafe that employ a couple of Karen women, and that's, another social enterprise sort of business. Through Lovadup and the Learning Centre, the settlement process is quite a success, but it's all basically self-funded. There is no government funding at all, our health service is a bit later to the response of it, but my decision was made and is still funded by the health service. I think it started about 4 years ago. The first refugee health nurse was a Karen girl herself, but she soon got out of it because I think she wanted to do more hands-on clinical nursing. The hospital also employs a Karen interpreter, which is, you know, quite good. Often that's my link to the Karen community. And yeah, within my role, as I said, I've been there for 2 years and it's still very much a developing role. I'm learning lots. And I still have, like, my biggest thing is still connecting with the Karen community, building that rapport. They're a culture that they don't like to ask for help. They're very resilient. They rely on themselves. And that's come from the fact that they didn't have services available, so they're not aware of what's available. Over probably the last 12 months has been a really good growth for me, connecting with women in particular who have lived in NIL for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. I have a client who's utilising NDIS. I have a lot of the women are having trouble conceiving, but the other challenge is our distance to anywhere. We don't have sexual health, we don't have, you know, all our care is through through GPs and referrals, and then it's a matter of how do they get to places. And I don't see that that's ever going to change because we live rural and, you know,
So four really different circumstances, but I think you've all identified some of the challenges that we can all imagine around isolation, lack of services, reliance on community GPs. It'd be good to sort of focus a little bit on what some of the real positive things are. Casey, you've touched on it a little bit in terms of the relationship between the community and the Karen community and what that's brought to the town and how that's kind of solved a bit of an employment issue, if you like. Would any of you others like to comment on some of the positive issues around regional settlement, either for the community or positive experiences that you've actually had as a refugee health nurse? Leanne, you're nodding.
I think a positive thing that we do is actually we do the woe-to-go care. So I see every single person who arrives and start the health assessment process to care planning, because we're in the GP practice, so we maximise MBS item billings because that's the only way we get paid. From care planning to the referrals and women's health, so I do all that. But that's also then lends itself to relationship building within the community. And at the moment, our community is Congolese women at risk. So we've got a lot of women and a lot of children, and they've created a culture club. So things like they get together every Friday at our organisation. We're a community health organisation with the GP practice sitting inside it. So we give them our space to be able to do those things, and they've started cooking club. And it's not just the Congolese that get together, it's the Bhutanese women that come along as well. And so they've created their own cook-off championships and things like that. So, yeah. So from us having the base for that first 6 month connection that we have with them, really good things have developed. And the relationship then extends to the school and the teaching the children English and play groups, that they get together and create their own play group. And that's some really positive stuff. Gateway Community Health had also had a few little buckets of money also to do stuff on family violence. And you know, the Bhutanese community presented a YouTube clip and created their own song for women to say, yes you can, and yes you can is about you can say no, and yes you can is you can exist and move on your own, you don't need a man. But on that premise, that was culturally acceptable to them, and you don't have to say no. So, and our African men did a video clip to say no to violence too, so no to violence against women. And so those initiatives have come from, I like to think, that small start that they've had with us for the first 6 months. And our GP practice is very fortunate. It's very progressive in how we try and get our little buckets of money, because we have a gender clinic. So we have a gender service for young people We've got a big sexual health clinic, and so we have abortion options available for all women. We do our own TB management. We do our own HIV management. And Hep C's. We run a clinic for Hep C. So anything you need, we're very happy to put our hands up and do.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
I think for me, doing this for quite a long time, and I've been really fortunate because I sit in public health, and even though I sit come in a population public health, I actually sit within the hospital, and our hospital is quite supportive, and I have the best boss in the world as the director of public health, who's even more supportive. And I think just because it's sort of grown over the years, and lots of people have come, got good relationships, because the girls who work in Starts have also been there for a long time. The people that work in North Coast Settlement Services, which is like our old migrant service where people go after SSI, I've also, Cheryl's been around as long as I have, so there's a whole lot of us. I think that's one thing about a rural community, people do probably tend to stay longer in positions, so you do get those really good relationships. And our LACs kept going also from before, and we also have a multicultural network group as well, so sometimes there can be a lot of meetings, but it's good because we all work together. And for the last 3 years we've held a multicultural health expo, which has been really good, and I've had over 54 stalls come, and great entertainment from all different parts of our community. It's been really good, and people have learned a lot. We've had about, anywhere 700 to 1,000 people come on the day, and we employ all our interpreters, so there's no reason people can't grab the interpreter and say, I want to know about this. And we've also been quite involved with the schools, and they all come along, the senior students, and not only just the refugee community last year, but the other students said, well, why can't I go? Because they don't get that as kind of opportunity. So it's been really, it's worked really well, lots of different things. And Starts are amazing. They have two community development offices, and they do afternoon activities for the kids, and I have them go along and say hi, and then for a little while we were able to go to the school, and we might be able to go back now because we're going to get more nurses. But that was also a really good initiative because the kids see us with their parents but don't necessarily have the opportunity to talk to us privately, so it was a really good opportunity when we were able to get to the school that they could come and talk to us there privately without those parents around and bring up things that they had concerns about. So we've done lots of different things over the years, like I said, with all different organisations and Starts. I've had coffee groups, and again, the restaurant one, Fiasco, is a local Italian restaurant, and they've got all of the refugee women to go down there and allow to use all their fantastic restaurant premises and do cook-offs. So that's a really good thing, is cooking, and that's from all across, but probably a dozen different cultures have gone down to do that. So there's lots of things happening all the time in Coffs. We're pretty multicultural, and I think if you don't know the history of Coffs, because in Wagulga, which is 30 minutes north of Coffs, there's been an Indian Punjab community there since the 1890s. So I think, and also we had even some Salvadorian refugees came to Coffs in the 80s, and we've also got a big migrant community from post-war, lots of Germans and Italian, big Italian community. So I think Coffs is quite welcoming to our communities. So yeah, it's quite good.
Georgia?
Kylie, did you want to throw something in here at the beginning of what's working really well in the community? And
I would say, you have been there since my second day. From what George has said, the fact that we're stationed outside of the hospital has been quite a positive thing, in that it's helped us build relationships with the lead service rather than being absorbed into the ethos of the Task Hospital. We're actually separate, and we're seen as separate by the lead organisation, the Task Hospital Group. So rather than, we all know hospital services get stretched, and often the nursing FTE can get absorbed in other areas. And although I strongly doubt that Georgia would allow herself to be absorbed anywhere but where she's passionate, I think physically being out of the hospital has been a positive experience for the council service. That's certainly what Georgia continues to reiterate and advocates for us to remain outside the hospital rather than being physically placed in the hospital. Certainly that's one of the main ones. Not sure what else she's written there.
So Georgia's other comments were around being able to provide a combined response to emerging issues while managing day-to-day arising situations, being able to plan
and have a coordinated flow and working together. So it is about those relationships again, and having the community part of that decision making, and all of the settlement staff, and I think the support of GPs is the critical thing that is the make or break. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. I've got that.
Casey, did you want to add anything, or are you?
No, I think, yeah, like you said, just having the support services available, like ours, for us, it's the Learning Centre, and also working closely with the GPs, yeah.
So you've all touched a little bit on one of my other questions, which is around some of the important key partnerships that either make or break the work that you're doing in the country. Does anybody else want to add anything to that, or identify any other sort of key stakeholder partnership agencies that you work with? I'm assuming there's settlement services in each of the areas where you're working.
Yeah.
How's that working for you?
Don't look at me. I'll go last this time.
Okay. So, when I first came, my settlement, like the settlement officer, was based at the Hymar Shire, which is our local government shire, but they have since ceased that job, that position. So now the settlement services actually come from Ballarat Community Health. And that, I think going forward, that's going to possibly even change, because you just can't expect to have someone on the ground as a settlement officer for the clients based 3 hours from where we are. So it had that, yeah, that needs to be looked at too.
George has written here, critical around the working with the Townsville Hospital Health Service.
Do what?
The hospital. The PHN, I think, if I'm right, the PHN have really just recently come on board to support your work.
Yeah, so that was again around the challenges with retaining GPs who are willing to service the refugee population, and building a relationship with the primary healthcare network is essential.
And she's written also QPAS, which is torture and trauma.
Yeah.
The other thing that she also wanted to mention with recent notifications on arrival of people with malaria was really important to be able to work with the hospital in building that emergency admission response. And I think there's other places around the country that have recently had to navigate that space as well. So that was really important to be able to, how do we get this happening quickly?
Again, with settlement services, we've got a good relationship with the new contract, so that's working well. But like I said, been around for a long time, so there's a lot of services. We've got Red Cross, who do driver training, and we have a good relationship with them. Northcott, also disability services with Burnside. They have a great parenting program. We work really close with them. There's and Red Cross also have playgroups, migrant playgroups, as well as mixed playgroups. So there's and because we have these multicultural network meetings, we all know what each other's doing. And also Centrelink go to those meetings, and TAFE goes to those meetings, who do their English classes. So it's actually a really good group of people. And even if it is just information sharing, it's out there, and you know what each service is doing and what everyone else is doing. So and you can refer people on. So I think that's a good thing. And I know, Sid, for us, actually, I think, even though we have an outreach clinic once a week is good, but also sitting in the hospital for us coming under public health, we work really closely with, well, I was the chest clinic TB nurse, I was the communicable diseases nurse, and we've got the HIV sexual health nurses and doctor and Hep C, so Hep B as well. So we've got all those clinics around us, and we're opposite antenatal clinic, we're opposite the paediatrician. So for us, sitting in the hospital is actually perfect, because I've got everybody, and we haven't even had a public dental clinic in our hospital. So we've got like almost a one-stop shop. So despite being good at outreach clinic, because people can get closer to us because we're, like I said, 4 kilometres south of the CBD where most people are, transport's not great, sometimes sitting in the hospital is good because you do have those access to services at your fingertips. And we've got really, and Pam's worked as a midwife for a long time, so she's got those connections. The other nurse works with me, worked in mental health for 10 years. I've worked around for 19 years. So because we've all been around and know everyone, we've got those links, and I think they are really important to have. So, yeah.
And probably just going on from that, that's something that we struggle with in our area is for the last 18 months, we haven't been able to have a full-time caseworker for the Albury side with Red Cross. We've had a lot of casual caseworkers who travel from Wagga or other places, so all new arrivals barely see a caseworker from where to go. That's improved and that's changed, and that's starting to work well finally. But they've got a lot to catch up on because the gaps that they left for 18 months we've taken on as a workload. Victorian side, the contract's with AIMS, but has then been subcontracted out, and they've just now, 18 months down the track, appointed a caseworker from Melbourne who happens to be an African gentleman in a 204 women at risk from Congo. They're all Congolese women. So that relationship hasn't started well because our women don't want to talk to an African man. Challenges, but that's part of connections that we're also working on is a little bit more strategically our relationship with the Albury Wodonga Health. We don't have any outpatient clinics to access in our area. Most people have to travel 3.5 to 4 hours to Melbourne. New South Wales may be able to get to Wagga, which is 2 hours, but still it's Wagga, Sydney or Melbourne. So we're trying to build that relationship to talk about outbreak management and how to streamline the emergency department, but also trying to get them to advocate on our behalf for the other specialists and doctors in the area. We don't have a midwife clinic, so all our pregnant women go to private obstetricians. So that whole specialist area is something that our plans are to work on that relationship.
So it sounds like you have to do a lot of thinking about networking and linking and knowing what services are out there.
Yeah.
And you have to be a bit of a Jill of all trades in doing community education and disease control and judging bake-offs. And
I taste the bake-offs.
Just thinking about the refugee health nurse scope of practice, what sort of skills do you think are the most important that you end up using in country areas, or what are essential for you? Take that.
Jill of all trades, Jack of all trades.
Sorry.
I said, I think I know a little bit about a lot of things now since taking on this and over the years. But I think also, the biggest thing I found is if you be kind and you listen, and you do the best you can for people, that's all you can do. And just be culturally aware, not necessarily appropriate, because like you said, everyone, just because you come from a certain country doesn't mean you're going to have those cultural language traits that someone else does. We've got people from all different places, so, you know, it's just, like I said, just be kind to everyone, be an advocate. That's what we are. We advocate, 24/7 for everyone. Talking about the specialists, I didn't mention that. That's a big challenge for us. We've got it's taken me a long time over the years to get a lot of the specialists on board to not charge that big gap. Because even though we're lucky we have the antenatal clinic, we do have a gastroenterologist, we do have a paediatrician in the hospital and fracture clinic, there's all of those other specialists outside that I've had to negotiate. If anybody needed to see the orthopaedic surgeon, if we wanted to take him straight to the practice, he'd charge the big gap. So he made a deal with me, if I bring people at 7 o'clock in the morning to Grand Rounds with their interesting orthopaedic problems, so they can sit in front of all the orthopaedic doctors, then I won't charge. But we just got a new orthopaedic doctor who said, no, you don't need to do that anymore. But he's young and lovely, but that's okay. But just that's the outlet. That is, So, yeah.
Any other skill set?
George has written here that she needs to have really broad base of knowledge and really in-depth expertise in case coordination. Mm. Anything else on that, Kylie?
Um, not speaking for Georgia, but certainly from what I've heard in Bridge today, it sounds like we do fantastic work with our nurse clinics, and I'm sort of wondering where we go moving forward in terms of advocating together with the College of Nurse Practitioners. Rather than having to have such a reliance on GPs, I'm wondering why we aren't advocating more for the nurse practitioner-led area. Around item numbers of the PMS, and you know, I think it's a great, yeah, massive problem. I think it would be great if we could advocate together with the college to create more nurse practitioners in the refugee health space.
Yeah, I think it's a bias of community space that absolutely made for nurse practitioners. I mean, we're lucky we've got one in the room that's today, and we're hearing it about her practice afterwards. But when we were talking before about building the skills, the competency framework, you know, that's ultimately what we'd be looking at. And I think for particularly for rural and regional nurses, getting them skilled up to that level, I think it'd just be absolutely life-changing for a lot of both the patients and the nurses and stuff. So I think that's I think it's a manageable and realistic goal to work towards. It will take some effort. It will take funding. And that will mean, you know, having to be really strategic, particularly around election time, where those parties are out there spending billions of our taxpayer dollars. So, you know, that's, and when we work for ourselves as refugee nurses in Australia, but often there's a good sense of working strategic and safe health who ask for the dollars and how that's happened. So, yeah,
that's partly why I was employed as a second officer in that space of nurse practitioner there.
The recent nurse practitioner reference group recommendations from the MBS Task Force Review absolutely support the scope of practice for health nurse practitioners.
Yep.
I think it's really great, although there's absolutely no support from the AMA or the RACG around expanding the nurse practitioner scope of practice and access to MBS. I think it's really that it's generally Australian nurse practitioners doing a lot of work around that.
Yeah, I think if you understand that the AMA is the most powerful trade union in Australia and director as such, then you can get past that conversation and their ideology with that.
Just coming back to the panel, Casey, did you want to add anything else to the
I believe my role is based around case management and advocacy. Following up with referrals and
Okay, just before we wind up, I might open it up to the group if anybody else has any questions they would like to ask our regional panel.
I don't have a question, but you asked a comment about what makes a
difference.
I think it's just grown. It's grown bigger than me now. Like, it was me for a long time. I keep saying me, but I felt like it was me. And if I didn't have the best boss in the world who supported me, who was at the end of the phone, because he sits in Port Macquarie and I'm in Coffs. So I was very lucky to have him. But now I've got, like, Pam and I've got Ev. It's completely made a complete difference to my life that you're not alone. But sometimes I feel like I still am. And I feel like I can't ask them to do things because I'm so used to doing it myself, but I think I'm just one of those, I'm just lucky, I think. And I've got a really good husband who is a mental health nurse practitioner, who is my go-to guru. So I can offload on him and he offloads on me and we have a great partnership. So I think I'm lucky in that point. But my boss has been at me first to go and get clinical supervision. But just trying to set that up is difficult. And there's Girls From Starts. We also, I can bring them if I'm worried, and so I'm lucky in that way. But I think I'm just really lucky that I do have a really supportive manager. And yeah, and I've got, like I said, I'm really lucky around me. Now I've got Pam and Ev, of course. But before that, I had, you know, I had like the paediatrician's been fantastic. And she was in Wagga before, if anyone's from Wagga. She was like, we're so lucky we have her now. and she was down there doing refugee health paediatrics. So I've got her, and I've got, you know, like Emmanuel who works with us. He's sexual health, HIV, and our sexual health nurse is great. Like I'm just really lucky, I think, that I've got these really good networks around me. So when I didn't have people like Pam and Ev working with me as other nurses, I, you know, had them to rely on. So yeah.
Anyone else?
Victorian Refugee Health Network, who's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They offer good support.
Kylie, do you want to throw anything at that yet from up north?
I think much like most people have said, you need to be agile in all trades and be willing to jump in and what's needed at the time with respect and everything.
Oh, can I just also add, I think our clinic itself has been going for about 5 years, and while I was a practice nurse within the clinic and then stepped into this role, our clinic, GP clinic as a whole, really hasn't had the time to sit back and assess and review our practices and what works and what doesn't. And our refugee clinic's very similar. I've been there 18 months and we're now at that point, because I work with one GP, that we just want to push pause and actually go do a review and go what's working and what's not working. And I think that strengthens what you do and just acknowledges also that you do a great job. Is that winding me up?
That's our 5 minutes. Yep. Really ready for that. I think we have one last question.
It wasn't a question. I wanted to add one of the strengths that a refugee health nurse needs. I was going to, she mentioned trust. And I was saying trust and actually thinking outside the box. Because in the rural areas, most of us work all by ourselves. But then we live in a bigger community. So it is up to us to explore what is within the community that can help us and support us. There are other groups in the community that if you liaise with them and if they know your role, they will always be there for you 24/7. And I realized that in exploring those areas, it has really helped me, because occasionally you are just beside yourself. You have a asylum seeker who has no funding, who is almost becoming homeless. But all these people are there, and they are ready to work with asylum seekers and refugees. So if you actually work with them, you become an advocate to actually help your clients. Your clients are happy and you're also happy.
Can I speak as my real self? One of the things that is really important that we all have an emotional well-being plan. Something that's really structured that you've thought about and you write it down. Who are the people, the places, the activities that help you debrief when you've had that, when all of the vulnerabilities in your life kick in? And this is something as undergrad nurses we need to support that learning as well as lifelong learning. Because if we're not emotionally well, we can't give the best care to the people in our care. So some things that I regularly engage in peer supervision, and in our hospital health service that's encouraged for all the nurses. I also have in my team, encourage them all to have a mental health care plan and review that against their 6-monthly, 12-monthly performance development plan. So it's, I don't need to know what's in it, but you know, you need to review it, what's changed, people move on, you don't have the same people there to support you. And then also think about, because you don't want to go home and drink a bottle of wine every night of the week. Go home and yell at the kids or kick the puppy dog, you know, it's not really fair. So some really good systems. Think about who's in your space. For me, when I came into my role in Queensland, there was Merrill's predecessor that I knew. But around me now, the work that we've been doing collectively that got RNA together, and then you all here today, you're part of my network. And, you know, that's the strength of bringing people together, being connected, and knowing that you can reach out to one another and that you've probably shared a similar day. And there's people to help you and not be fearful of that. So, that's my... Sorry, I just wanted to pass that on because I think it's really important that we do take and make time to care for ourselves.
Thank you for that, Leanne. And thank you all for sharing your stories. And it's probably a good note to finish on. I think we're ready to have time. Yes, can you just join me in thanking our original...